All right, everybody. Welcome back to Pyro Toasty Talks. Tonight, we have for you a smackdown, a trash-talkening, a throwdown, hoedown with Renee and Zona talking about all of their least favorite parts of wood-burning art and running a small business. So strap in. It's going to be a fun time. And I'm going to probably not say too much because I get cringe during the haterade. So I'm just going to get myself out here. I'm going to let you guys enjoy the tea.
The tea. The piping hot tea.
That has been brewing.
Is it a hootenanny?
A hootenanny.
A haterade hootenanny. Come on down to the pyrography tea party. We're here. To sip and judge. So,
Okay, but listen though. Even though this is a least favorites episode, I really don't like to hate on other people or other people's businesses. So, yes, I do have least favorites. I do have negative things to say about some of these things, but there's a silver lining between, like, just trash talking and giving people legit advice about experiences that I have, even if they are negative. So I'm not here to hate on anyone. I just, not everything can be my favorite, and I have things to say about it.
That's fair.
Yeah. But it is still tea for people who want to know.
That's fine. Mm. I just felt like I had to bring something.
You had to bring the energy. That's fair. That's fair. Okay, well, let's dive in. So the last episode we started with materials. So let's start with our least favorite materials. Least favorite wood. Go.
Pine.
Pine sucks. I hate pine.
Okay, to be fair, I think that is the... one wood, it's the cheapest wood that as a beginner that you can get, right? Like, you can get pine blanks damn near anywhere, right? Like, from, yeah. Like, most hobby shops, stores have pine. That's, generally speaking, that's what their blanks are. They're pine. Sometimes I found out in, like, Hobby Lobby they have acacia.
Do they really?
Yeah, they have some acacia stuff. Mm. And I know that you can get, I believe, aspen now from certain stores. But for the most part, it's pine and basswood,
mm-hmm.
right? And I remember I got pine, and not gonna lie, this was in the very beginning, and I was burning hot, and it was smoky, and I was like, oh, this smells nice. And I used to, like... the smoke
huffing, like, the pine.
Yes, like, before I realized what that was. And then the problem is that I get migraines.
Yep.
So what did that smoke do? It activated the migraines, and I'm like taking my meds, and I'm like, why is this not helping? Why is this not working? And then I found out why.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just like, oh damn. Oh damn. And that's also when I invested in an RZ mask and a freaking fan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, man, I don't want to burn on this pine, but I've got it. So I've got to burn. I literally, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, pun.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to burn through it, right? But I was just like, oh, no, we're not doing this. I was like, I got to find something else because this.
This sucks.
I was like, this. It's not worth my health. It's not worth my none of it. None of it at all.
Nope.
Like, it was also not just giving me a headache, but it was just, like, killing my lungs.
Mm.
So, you know, and I also have asthma, so here
Oh, that's
we go,
great. That's, know? A good combination.
Right?
Yeah.
It's super. So, you know, that was just also another reason why I got the fan and the mask because, yeah, let's preserve... the body, which
yeah.
is part of the instruments, right?
Yeah.
It's what we use. So, yeah, but pine is absolute last favorite
mm-hmm.
wood to have to burn.
She's the worst.
The bad thing is that I've got slabs of it here, and I'm trying to figure out what the hell I'm gonna do with them. And I'm like crying on the inside because I know that I have to do something with it.
Just paint it. Do like a painted design or something. Don't burn it.
I was thinking about doing like a welcome sign because it's one of those like long slabs. I was gonna do like a welcome sign, burn the outline, and then just paint it in.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing fancy at all. Because pine.
Something simple.
Become yes. A welcome y'all sign.
Welcome, not y'all. The welcome y'all.
Welcome y'all signs.
I could do one that says gangbusters.
Oh no.
Yeah, pine is no bueno. So my least favorite would also be pine, but also oak. I hate burning on oak. Oak, red oak, white oaks, they just suck. Oak is so dense, and it is physically so hard on my wrist to burn oak, and I get so fatigued. It hurts. But I hate the smell. I hate how it burns. It doesn't burn well. It doesn't, like, everything about it sucks. But pine is definitely my biggest nemesis. Ugh. So when I first started burning, I didn't have a fan. I didn't have a mask. I just started burning. And I don't know that I burned on pine. I know I burned on a piece of plywood. And I had gone to the wood section at Michael's and gotten like some of the birch veneer thin planks, and David cut them into some smaller pieces for me. And then because we were working in the wood shop, you know, David had some old logs and stuff that he made like cute little ornaments for me. And, you know, I started on little things like that, but I didn't have a fan. So when I first started wood burning, I hated it. I was like, this sucks. I don't know how people can wood burn, because like you're hunched over your piece of wood, you're burning, the smoke is going directly up into my eyeballs, my eyes are watering, it gives me a headache. I'm very sensitive to smells, like cigarette smoke, headache, floral candle, headache, like wax scent, like scentsy melts or whatever, headache, cologne, headache. So the smoke and the smell was like, this sucks. Like, it's fun, but like, I'm in pain and I'm miserable afterwards and my eyes are watering and I have terrible allergies. Like, what? But then I discovered a fan. Oh, and it was like having a fan changed the game, because mm-hmm. I figured out you can turn the fan away from you and it creates a draft and blows the smoke away, and that was like game changer. I was like, oh, now I get it. This is awesome, you know. But I was still getting a lot of headaches from smoke, not being in a well ventilated area and just not really taking care of myself in the best way that I need to. I still don't most of the time, to be honest. I bought a new fume extractor, and it's still sitting in the box because I haven't unpacked it yet. But anyway, I do have a mask. I hate wearing it because I hate having things on my face. So I'd rather have a fume extractor, but I don't have the space to set up the new fume extractor. So I need to clear off my desk before I can open the fume. Like, it's a whole thing. It's the ADHD, like all these things I got to do before I can do the thing.
Random question. Which fume extractor did you get?
I don't know. It was like $90 off of Amazon. I don't remember the brand. I looked at so many.
Do you have the type of ADD where you go to set up a fume extractor and by the evening you're like reshingling the roof?
Yes. Unfortunately, yes. So my ADHD is basically unmanaged. Like, I'm not on any meds for it. I basically just try to manage it with my lifestyle and the lifestyle that works for me, make lifestyle changes. But like, I'm very aware of whenever my ADHD is like affecting my life and how I'm living my life and the things that I'm doing. So if I'm like doing this thing, the biggest thing lately has been the garden for me, because we're doing a lot of gardening. You know, we've been doing a lot of yard work, working on the vegetable bed, working on the new garden beds out in the front by the driveway. You know, we've been doing all this stuff. So like, I'll be out there and I'm doing this thing. And then I'm like, oh, I have that seedling I was going to go get in the ground. So I go get the digging knife and then I'm like, let me get this in the ground real quick. And I go out there, but then I see like all the weeds and I'm like, okay, let me pick the weeds out of this bed. And then I'm like, well, hold on, let me go get a trash bag. But then the trash bag's not where I thought it would be. So I'm like, okay, well, let me take my shoes off and go inside. Well, now that I'm inside, the sink's full of dishes. So I'm going to do all these dishes and then I'll go outside. And then it's like, wait, hold on, while I'm inside, let me go down and fold that load of laundry. Because, like, so it's like, and then next thing you know, I'm like at the road, like hauling out furniture from the basement, because I was like, well, while I'm going upstairs, let me just take this trash table that's been here for 6 months that I want to throw out at the road. I got to go up the stairs anyway. So, you know, this is like, what was I doing? Oh, I was trying to get the seedlings in the ground. Okay. And then it's like 4 hours later, I've painted, I've burned, I made a phone call, like I paid a bill, I did a load of laundry, and the dishes still aren't done. You know what I mean?
How are the seedlings doing?
Seedlings are fine.
They finally made their way into the ground.
They're on the ground.
Yeah. Well, we agree on pine.
Yeah.
You said you don't like oak. I find that I don't like willow oak. For essentially the same reason as you. The last time I burned on willow oak was a lot better than any other time that I burnt on it. But I think it's because the machine that I have now, I can burn hotter.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured out a technique with a tip that I have to get the burn done faster. Mm. So I can just be done with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not a fan of the smell. I'm not a fan of how it burns. It is the dents. It's a lot of the pockets again. Mm-hmm. And the grains and the difficulty in getting like a clean line. So it's just like I have to shade, but I have to use a knife point or something with an edge at the very least to get a nice clean edge instead of bleh. Because I'm not sanding it down. This one I'm not trying to sand it. I'm just trying to burn it and be done with it. Figured out how to do that. But no, I am not a fan of willow oak. And every time I burn onto it, I'm like, I'm not doing this again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw that piece, and then I'm like, I guess I am doing it.
I guess I am doing this again.
And then, of course, I pulled out some willow oak pieces, and then I was like, oh, darn, I have, like, 8 more pieces.
Oh, Zona.
So now I kind of have to figure out something.
So. David, do you hate any wood?
Yes, what's your least favorite wood to work with?
So I don't work with very many woods that I absolutely hate, because I get to make that choice. But you guys were all talking about how much you love poplar, and it's like probably my least favorite one that we sell to work with in the shop.
Why?
Because it's stringy. It like it when you go to cut it, like it tears out a lot of the grain, unless you have like super fancy new saw blades, maybe. $200 saw blade investment incoming at some point. It hasn't yet, but hopefully soon. And so like they just require like a lot of sanding, whereas like a hard maple, which you maybe like less because of how hard it is,
it cuts so well.
It comes off the saw like glass. Like I don't have to hardly do anything to it.
That's interesting, right? Because it's kind of like this, you know, dichotomy, right? Where, you know, the wood that is good for burning on, because it's soft, because it's malleable, because it's, you know, easy to burn on, also makes it difficult to cut because of those same reasons.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a different type of difficult to cut. It's really because it lands me with the job I like the least, which is more sanding. Like, it's harder to push hard maple through the saw because it's hard. Like, you can just slam poplar through. It's so soft, it doesn't matter. But and then I have to do the job I like the least, which is sanding everything.
So you'd much rather push a hard piece of maple through the saw than, you know, sit there running that through the drum sander, you know, 15 times.
Yeah. I mean, ask the wood burners. How often do they want to sand any of their pieces?
Oh, I know. I've helped sand enough pieces that I can vouch for that.
Hours upon hours of prep work on wood that is not pre-prepped, right? Because you got to go through the grits.
Honestly.
And to make it, to get it to a... When I learned that part of the problem to the poor burns that I was doing, when I learned that the part of the problem was that I wasn't sanding the wood down smooth, like I was using a sponge sander, but I wasn't using like a drum sander. Like, and once I found a drum sander, I was just like, what? Once I found out there was a thing called an orbital sander, I was just like, mind blown. But yeah, once I learned that sanding the wood down just makes everything, like life just so much brighter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can't ever go to the dark side again.
I can't. Mm-mm. I can't. But then it's just like you have to set aside a day.
Yep.
To do the sanding.
Yeah.
And God almighty. I actually went and got like... when I sand, I have my AirPods in with the noise canceling. And then I have the over-the-ear ones on top of that because I'm like, and I can still hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, my ears are going to be ringing for days. This is going to suck. But yeah, being able to burn on nice wood, just transferring a pattern on nicely sanded wood is like, the difference night and day.
I know. And there are so many people who like
sand your wood.
Yeah. There are so many people who don't sand their wood. And I'm like, I don't know how you're making that work for you. Like, I'm a big believer in everybody has their own process. So whatever works for you, works for you. So if you have unsanded wood and it's working for you, fine. But I don't get it. I don't understand how that is working for you because I can't make it work for me. Now that I have experienced nicely sanded wood, and that is our standard with our business, like, we don't put out things that aren't sanded or half-assed sanded. If we do, we let you know, hey, this is B grade, or hey, this is not sanded, this is discounted, whatever. Like, having that smooth, like, glass surface is where it's at. And I am a snob now. Like, I will not accept anything less than perfect. Like, it's not happening. Mm-mm. It has to be perfect.
What are your thoughts on, I know a lot of people starting out, I know that you started out with a lot of this, like the stuff that you get from like the Dollar Tree, you know, the little, you know, cheap wood picture frames and stuff like that. What are your thoughts on those? Do they have a place? Do they have a purpose?
They do have a place. So if you are just beginning, starting out and just testing the waters with wood burning and color and all of that with the cheapy stuff is totally fine. And there are a lot of valuable lessons and things that you can gain from using the cheapy dollar store stuff. Absolutely. A lot of the dollar store stuff, cheapy Target finds, whatever, a lot of it is like a plywood with some kind of thin birch or basswood veneer glued on top of it. So like, or it'll be like MDF in the middle with a thin layer of quote real wood on top of it. So like, you can burn on it, but there are so many buts here. Like, but if you burn too deep, then you're burning into the plywood and that's full of chemicals. If you're burning too deep, you're burning into the MDF, or you're burning through the glue layer. Or if you sand too hard, then you've totally sanded right through the surface. Because like, I'm talking the thin veneer on these pieces are like less than a millimeter. Sometimes they're less than half a millimeter. Like, these products are made to be as cheap as possible. So they're going to use the cheapest resources, which is going to be minimal wood, the most trash possible. So
they're not made for a pyrographer who's going to sand it down so it's nice and
smooth. Right. It's no, made it's made for like preschool or Sunday school yes. class to paint.
Paint a paintbrush and markers.
Right, like right. That, they're supposed like to be cheapy kind of things.
Medium. It's not made for the for our medium.
It's not.
However,
but like I said, there are things that you can learn from it. Though you can learn how water will spread through grain if you're mm-hmm. looking at testing watercolors. If you're looking at testing markers, like if you want to burn, you know you can, but you just have to be aware that this is not real wood through and through. There are hazards that go along with it, just like there are hazards with everything else. You have to know what you're burning through in order to do it safely. And you need to know that it's just not going to be the best quality. So it's not going to stand up to a $150 piece of art that might be the same thing with the same color, but it's on a very nice piece of wood. And you've just put it on a 50 cent you know, dinky little thing, and it's just not the same quality. And you have to be aware that there is a difference and people do care. But a lot of people, when they're first starting out, you don't want to spend a ton of money, especially if you don't know if you're even going to like the hobby. So people don't want to go buy really nice pieces of wood. People don't want to buy, you know, anything that's too expensive, because what if I don't like it? Or what if I don't stick with it? Like, I just want to test. So that's fine. Go get yourself some cheap dollar store wood pieces, bring them home, see what you can do with them, see what it's about, and upgrade as soon as you start getting frustrated. Once you start getting frustrated, that's when you know it's time to upgrade.
I mean, I will say that like one of my I wouldn't say best sellers, but one of my decent sellers is a do not disturb sign that I used Dollar Tree wood on.
Mm-hmm.
Like I made it on Dollar Tree wood, and then that allowed me to keep the price point reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I do a chalkboard on one side, and
oh, that's fun.
The original version is that it was painted on mm-hmm. the other side, but I plan to redo it and do a burn instead of paint. Actually, I got to make one for a custom order for a friend of mine, but like that is fine for something that simple, right? Like a mm-hmm. do not disturb sign. It's really great for something like that because again, you can keep the price point simple. You can keep it down. You don't have to charge, you know, $50-$60 for this sign, because you know the piece of wood that you're using to begin with is a cheaper wood, so you can charge like $20.
Sure.
You know, so it keeps the price down. I think depending on it, at the end of it, it depends on what your market is, right? Like if you're mm-hmm. gonna do fine art, you don't do it on Dollar Tree.
You don't do it on Dollar Tree.
You do it on an appropriately.
You do it on fine canvas. Art wood. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think it has its place. I think it definitely has its place. It has its purpose. Whether you're professional or you're a beginner, I mean, it's great for a beginner because if you mess up a piece of Dollar Tree wood, you've only spent $1.25. You can mm-hmm. get another one. You know right. what I mean? Versus if you spent $20, $30, $40 on a canvas,
right?
And you mess that up, it's just like you're scrambling in your head about how you're going to
salvage it.
Yes. How are you gonna salvage it?
How can I sand this down? How can I use this again? Yeah.
There's just the myriad of things going through your head about, my gosh, I just spent so much money on this canvas that I've now completely annihilated.
Mm-hmm.
So
we talked about the canvases. What about the tools? What are some of the tools, the wood burners, the nibs? What is a no-no?
Ooh, okay, the term no-no, I think, is a little... That is perspective. That is all perspective, mm-hmm. right? Like, I like being able to adjust my temperature,
mm-hmm.
right? I like being able to fine-tune how hot or warm, or you know, that I'm going to burn, right? And there's some burners that don't allow for that. And so you've got one temperature. Period. End of story. It's not going up. It's not going down. It's just there.
It's just on.
And it's just like, I find that I like burning hot. So that tool that's not letting me change the temperature is frustrating the bejesus out of me. So, but I know people that are just like swear
right
by that tool. Like, and that's great. Super. I could not figure out how to make it work for me permanently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, it serves its purpose when I was teaching myself, when I was learning.
Sure. Yeah.
So
I feel that way about the Walnut Hollow Versatool. So, okay, I'm sorry, Walnut Hollow. I just don't care for it. But like Zona said, it is all perspective. So for me, I did not start out with the Walnut Hollow Versatool. When I started wood burning, I started with the Coalwood because that was David's grandpa's tool that he already had in the wood shop. So when I moved up to Pennsylvania and I was needing some kind of like artsy thing to do, I didn't have any of my like crochet or anything. I moved up to Pennsylvania with two suitcases and everything else I owned was in a storage unit. So I didn't have any of my art supplies, like none of my stuff. It was all back in Texas. And David was like, well, if you're feeling like creative, you know, my grandpa had this wood burner. Have you ever tried that? And I said, no. And so he pulled it out and he showed me like, here are the tips that it comes with. And here's like some plywood from the shop, I guess, you know, just like give it a try. So that's what I started with. And so when I did end up buying the Walnut Hollow Versatool later on, I felt like it was such a downgrade. I didn't have the temperature control that I wanted. I didn't have the flow of the nibs that I wanted. I could do what I wanted to do so much better with the Coalwood than I could with the Walnut Hollow. But that is like, I realize that I am in the minority in that regard. Like so many people start with the Walnut Hollow because it's the cheapest and they don't have anything. They're just starting out. I want to try wood burning. What do I get to try? And the Walnut Hollow Versatool is the beginner tool. It is at the beginner tool price point. It's at the beginner tool, like skill level. Like it is the most commonly grabbed go-to. And that's totally fine. And then people will learn from there and they'll realize what their frustrations are or what their art style is. Maybe they want to burn hotter. Or maybe they're not getting the lines they want or whatever. And then they upgrade to a more professional, durable tool. But for me, it is just not it. I cannot get the hang of it. I feel so clunky with it in my hand because it's bulky. Like the pen is bulky and you can't hold it close to the tip like you can with a normal pen. You have to hold it like way up here because the like tip of the Versatool is so long. You have to like hold it, so it's weird to hold, it's weird to maneuver. And I just got so frustrated with it, so I never really used it. You know, I've played with it. I've done things with it. I've showed it in my classes. When I've taught in-person classes, I've brought it with me. And I'm like, these are the different tools. You know, here's the Optima that we're using today in class. But here's another beginner tool that some people use. And I cannot stand it. But going back to the perspective part, this is something that I always tell all of my wood burning students in all my classes, like, you have to use what works for you. And if you are finding that you're not having any problems with the Versatool, like it's working for you, then stick with it. Like there's no need to go buy a $200-$400 machine. If you're totally fine with the one that you have, that's $40. That's fine. Like the quality of work is not in the wood burner itself. It's how you're going to use it. And there are professional pyrographers who use the Walnut Hollow Versatool. Example.
Swear by it.
Right. Example, Court O'Reilly from at Hippie North on Instagram. I don't know if she has a Facebook, but she's written a book and her Instagram is Hippie North. She uses the creative or the Walnut Hollow Versatool for some of her stuff. And it is phenomenal. She does realism. She does shading. She does animals and eyes and textures and fur. all with the Wanna Hollow Versatool. I think she also has a razor tip that she does a lot of her stuff with as well. But when she is using the Wanna Hollow, like, she says it. It's in her caption, you know? You can see it in her reels and her videos. And her work is stunning. But here's the difference between me and her. She was willing to work with that tool and to master that tool. So she's made it work for her. But I have not put in that patience. I don't have the patience for it. I did not put in the time to master it to that level. So, yeah, you can do all sorts of stuff with the tool you have, but it depends on your frustration level, your patience. Are you willing to work with what you have, you know? And for me, the answer was no. I needed a more powerful machine to do what I wanted to do.
I think it also depends on what it is, what kind of pyrographer you want to be, right? Like Vanessa Robinson from Woodburn University, she uses the Versatool.
Mm-hmm.
She does a lot of like shading and realism.
Yeah.
And I can see how the Versatool is better for that versus the razor tip. I am trying to broaden my horizons and I'm doing more realism and I'm trying to use the razor tip. I'm relearning how to use my razor tip to do realism.
Mm.
But I can see how the fact that the way that the Walnut Hollow Versatool is made,
mm-hmm.
how it's so much easier.
It definitely can be.
And shading.
It definitely can be.
It also depends on the tips.
This is true. It goes hand in hand with the nibs.
Yeah.
Yep.
It does. But.
Yeah, it's not it's not always the tool. A lot of the times it's the wood or the nib or user error. you can do amazing things with that tool.
I don't necessarily want to say user error. I think I'd rather say that it's just, like I said, like what kind of pyrographer do you strive to be? Because like me and you, we like our dark, deep, straight lines, mm-hmm. and that's not something you can get with a Versatool.
Sure,
that's something that we have gotten with our wire tips because we have the razor tips, right? We have those knife tips that we were able to get mm-hmm. with our wire tip burners versus a Versatool.
Yeah. So like style, you mean? Like
yes.
Yeah, yeah. It like comes down to your style.
Like, yeah. Yeah. What kind of artist do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
What's your least favorite nib?
Ooh,
mine is a ball tip. I hate that. Unless I'm doing stippling.
Yeah. I love the ball tip for stippling and for doing my dot work. I love it for that. But for literally anything else, oh, and signing my name. I'll use it to sign my name on the back of my pieces with my signature. But literally for anything else, absolutely not. It is so blobby and clunky to me, and it leaves blobby lines. It gives fat lines. It doesn't distribute the heat evenly in a burn. Like, I just cannot get the ball tip to do what I want it to do. And so I say that, you know, its only purpose for me is stippling. But I do use it a lot. I do a lot of stippling. I do a lot of dot work and I do shading with my stippling. So like I use it a lot, but I don't think it's my like least favorite favorite.
It's definitely my least
favorite. I think my least favorite. Well, I don't know. I put in the medium skew, but I was talking about that as one of my favorites earlier because I've gotten to know it a little bit more. Oh, I closed it. I was gonna. Okay, there we go. Okay, it's recording. All right.
So, nibs. Least favorite nib. I personally don't like the ball. I do not like the ball tip. That is my least favorite. Mm-hmm. Unless I'm stippling, I do not like the ball tip.
Yeah, I feel that. I don't use it for anything other than stippling and my dot work and then also signing my name. I do my signature on the back of my pieces with the ball tip. But I just don't have the patience for it. Like, I hate the way it skips and makes blobby lines. Mm-hmm. That's just unavoidable. So, like, if you're listening to this and you have that problem and you're like, yes, why does it... it's not you, it's the nib. It will always do that. So you have to find a different nib. Sorry to break it to you.
Even, and it doesn't matter how smooth you get the wood.
Right.
If it's grainy and it's got like hard grains, you're going to blob. You're going to.
You're always going to blob. Yep. I mean, it's just the way of that nib. And I see this in Facebook groups a lot. People are like, help, it's blob. Like, I get these blobby lines. And people in the comments are always like, you need to sand your wood better. And I'm like, fam, that is not the solution. Like, not always the solution. Sure, sanding your wood helps with things, but when it comes to that nib giving you blobby lines, it's the nib. You could sand the wood to 600 and it's still going to be blobby. Like, it's not the wood.
Can I
and it would still be blobby.
Right.
Can I ask a dumb Brian question?
Yeah, go for it.
What's a blobby line?
So a blobby line... Okay, so you know when Zona's burning and like the line comes out crisp and straight? It's the opposite of that. it's touching down on the wood, and instead of getting like an equidistant, consistent thickness of a line, you'll get a line that like gives you a big blob in the middle and then maybe goes back to like a normal line, and then it'll give you another big burn blob, and it's basically the rounded end of your ball nib is sinking into weaker spots or less dense spots in the wood grain. So this is getting down to like the chemical composition of the wood and why the nib is sinking into the wood. Like, it's the wood grain. And so the inconsistencies of grain, the ring lines, the grow lines of the grain, all of that influences how your nib is going to burn. And using the rounded, it's like when you touch down onto the wood with the ballpoint nib, you're making a hole. You're making a perfect little like pitfall. And I don't know if y'all like have ever played Animal Crossing, but it's like it makes a little pitfall that your little character can like fall into. It's a perfect little hole. Like, that's what it is. You're making a pitfall. Like, yeah, it's a divot. You're burning a pothole into the wood, and the pothole is not always going to be consistent. David had something he wanted to say.
I was just going to say, if you need help visualizing what we mean by a blobby line, if you've ever had like a ballpoint pen where the ink is flowing out too fast, it's like that. Like, you have a normal line, and then all of a sudden there's like
a blob,
too much ink, and then it goes back to a normal line again.
Yeah, it's like you have a burn. Okay, nice burn, nice burn. Too much of a burn. Big dark spot. Okay, nice burn. Dark burn, nice burn. Dark burn, dark burn. Like, it's the nib. Get a different nib, because it's not going to do what you want ever. Don't waste your time. Stop being frustrated. Just pick a different nib.
Thank you for schooling me on blobby lines, because we've used that term several times, and I wasn't sure what that meant.
Yeah, it's, I know exactly what it is in my head, but for someone who might not know, it's kind of hard to describe it.
No, I think that you guys did a good job.
Okay, well, thank you.
Which of us did a better job, Brian?
As somebody who's more used to using pens than things that burn.
Wow. I cannot believe you just gave David that win. You should have seen the victory dance he just did.
Zona bought me a fountain pen a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and I think that made it very clear, very clear.
Blobby.
Yeah.
Blobby. It's going to give you a blobby line.
Yes.
Okay. How about color mediums?
Pastels. I hate them.
Acrylic.
You hate acrylic?
Came in hot.
Because we knew.
Ooh.
We knew.
Okay, so Zona hates acrylic. Tell me why.
Okay. It's not that I hate acrylic. It's a matter of... Okay. acrylic is very dense. It's very opaque. If you get it in a burn line, you are scrubbing out that burn line forever.
Mm-hmm. Or you're just burning over it.
Oh, wow. Well, I never even thought about that prior, but, you know. But it's like you're trying to scrub out the paint from mm-hmm. the burn line.
Yeah.
And it's frustration. Or you're spending an insane amount of time trying to paint within your color line so that you don't go into your burn.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, with watercolors, even if you get it into the burn line, a lot of the time, it doesn't matter because you're not going to see it.
It's translucent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although the caveat to that is something like the handmade watercolors where it's mica or, you know, mm-hmm. the color shifting, where if it gets in the burn line, you will see it.
Yeah. Yeah, you will.
But for the most part, with watercolors, you don't have to be ridiculously anal retentive about staying within the color lines. Whereas with acrylic, you do, one. Mm-hmm. And two, it's just like, it's just harder to maneuver on the wood. It takes more layers to get a nice consistent color. It's a bunny I did an egg mandala with acrylic, and the color payoff, great, phenomenal, love it. It was like I used like a gloss coat acrylic, great. It was just, I just sprayed it and then I was done with it, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas with like watercolor, I have to actually put like some effort into the sealing part. But it was the amount of time that it took me to do it, because I had to be very careful about not getting the acrylic in the burn.
Mm-hmm.
Frustration city for me.
One other thing that I'll add about the acrylics versus watercolors and stains is with the wood pieces. One of the things that I personally don't like about the acrylics is that because they're so opaque, they cover up all of that beautiful
woodness.
Yeah, the wood grain. Mm-hmm. Like, you lose all of that. It's basically like you're just covering it up with this color. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're using like a watercolor or a gel stain or something like that, that still shows through. And I think that, you know, when you're using wood as a canvas, that's something that you want to capitalize on. That's something that you want to showcase. And I don't, you know, maybe if you're just using like a little bit of color, just adding a little bit of color, you know, an acrylic is nice, but when you're covering up like a majority of the wood, mm-hmm. I feel like it loses something, and you know,
that's a good point.
It's an aesthetic, you know, maybe.
It is an aesthetic thing for sure. I hate pastels just in general, not just necessarily on wood. In general, hate them. They're messy. They get everywhere. They smudge. And I am just a clumsy person in general, right? Like, I just make a mess of things all the time. And pastels are just extra messy. And I just don't feel like the payoff is there for them. Like, I can get this effect with other things, with gel sticks, with watercolor pencils, whatever. I do not need this chaotic messiness. Absolutely not. So they are coming up in the Color Academy this weekend when we're doing that lesson. Pastels is part of it. And I included pastels because people want to know, and like, there are things you can do with them, but they are my least favorite. I do not use them. They're still boxed up in my thing over here. I will never use them. Ugh, I know how to use them. I just don't enjoy it. Like, and for why? I don't know. No.
I have pastels, and I got some cheapy pastels.
Mm-hmm.
For that exact reason, because I want to know what it is, because there's a purpose for everything. And I'm just wondering, like, if I learn it, like, would there be possibly any need for me to use a pastel?
No, no, there isn't. No, you'll never use them. Nope.
I need to learn from myself. No.
I mean, a lot of people do, though. That's why people spend so much money on art supplies and stuff. Like, that's part of why I offered the Color Academy is, like, people want to try these things. People want to know what these different things do, but you don't necessarily want to go spend, like, $50 on a set of XYZ.
I mean, I think that's one of the, like, one of the things that's so great about your Color Academy is the fact that you give a sample of stuff, of all these different mediums, for that exact reason, is to play with, you get to test out a medium just to see how do you feel about it. How do you like it? Do you not like it? Do you find something that you didn't think you were gonna like? And you know, maybe you find a new favorite. You've always loved, you know, acrylic pens, and then you find, oh my god, watercolors is the thing. You know what I mean? Like, but that's the great thing about the Color Academy, I will say, is that the ability to have these samples to try, because I think that's very important in any kind of artistic form, is to try the different things, because like you said, you won't know, you know, you don't know if you're gonna like something unless you try it.
Exactly.
And I believe that, like, with anything in life.
Yep. Food, you know. Experiences.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't know unless you give it at least one shot,
as long as it's not pastels.
Yes, exactly.
Listen, I find value in pastels enough that I included them in the kit, in the class, in the course.
They give you that kind of cool washed out look, don't they?
They can, yeah. And they're, you can smudge them and blend them. Like, you can do really cool effects with them. I just don't need that. I just, it's not for me.
I'm also kind of thinking, like, depending on what kind of wood canvas you use, like, is it just going to, like, settle in into the grain?
Yep.
And then it's just, like, streaks. And I'm not a streaky person. Like,
so
I like smooth. I like...
Yes.
I don't know.
So, okay, sassafras, oak, walnut, all of those woods that have open grain structures, the pastels, anything like that, the pastels, the gel sticks, the gelatos... It's going to sink into those open grains more so, and it'll be more streaky. And then in the closed grains, the dense grain, it's not going to appear as thick. So, like, it is a look. Crazy. If people like it, it's a look, and it's definitely an aesthetic thing. And there, you know, people can use that to their advantage if they want, but I don't care for it.
Least favorite subject matter. I forgot we were being haters.
Haters. Okay. I do not care for man-made things. I'm all about the nature, the flowers, the insects, the bugs, mandalas, organic things, architecture, buildings, cityscapes. I just don't care. Like, I will not take a custom. No. You want me to do a building? No. Sorry. Like, I will do house portraits, and that is the extent, and that is because they have made money for me in the past, and I can do a one and done thing and be done with it, and I've made some money on it, and it's okay. I can withstand it for a few hours, but as, like, my muse overall, I do not care for man-made stuff. Cars, trains, no, it's just not for me.
Portraits.
I
don't like portraits.
Like, humans?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess it goes back to, like, we as artists, we have learned our strengths and our weaknesses, right? Like, just overall. Mm-hmm. Just overall, right? And portraits, human faces, like, that is just not in my head. I am the ultimate artist that you will ever find, but when I put it on paper or canvas, no, it's just ridiculous. You ever look at IG and, like, or Reddit or whatever, and they're like, worst tattoos,
right? Worst tattoo fails.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then you know those tattoo fails? That's how it looks when I do a wood burn, a portrait.
Yeah.
Like, I know that that's exactly what it's going to look like. And Brian's just like, no, you should give it a try. And I'm like, yeah, I will try, because I will try to overcome, because that's, you know, that's what you do. You try to overcome your weaknesses. But I'm like, I'm nowhere near confident in the ability to do a portrait. And even if it's an animal, the thing that I tell most people, and I really do believe this, is that, you know, there's a look, there's a feeling, there's a... When an owner looks at a picture, it evokes a feeling, it evokes a memory, it evokes something, right? And I believe that when they look at a portrait, that it should be similar or the same, right? Like, there's a light in the eye, there's a look in the snoot, you know, there's that one quirky hair that they know about that you didn't even notice as an artist, you know what I mean? And it's just like, if I was to do a portrait, especially a memorial portrait, it's like, I want to do it justice. I want them to look at it and cry from happiness. I do not want them to look at it and cry of, what the F is this mess? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so yes, I have done portraits. I've done two. And I'm proud of those. But it's not something that, like, I am anywhere near confident in saying, yeah, I do portraits. I would do a portrait of your pet.
Yeah, no.
You know, like, I'm nowhere near that. So, so yeah, that's my least. And it's kind of also kind of like, for why, as you put it. You know what I mean? Like, why do I need to do a portrait? Everybody does portraits. Everybody and anybody else can do portraits.
Right. That's not my thing.
Right, like, I just started doing realistic flowers. You know what I mean? Like, let me get to the flowers. And yes, I'm doing lighthouses, but
it's not the same as a face.
It's not the same as a face. It's not the same as a body.
Right.
You know. Yeah, it's just not my jam at all. It's talk about things being on lowest on the totem pole. Yeah, porches are like way down on the low totem pole. Like, I can think of a whole bunch of other things I would rather teach myself and practice on than portraits.
I feel
one
that.
Day I'll get to it. One
See,
day,
I didn't one even think about portraits. Like, I don't do people at all. I don't do people. I have done some dogs. Selectively, because some dogs I just cannot do. I can't do the fur right. I can't do the face right. But then there are some dogs that are very easy for me. And I have a couple of different styles of art. And one of them is just very basic line work. And I feel very confident in some dogs in that style. So, like, yeah, I've done some dog portraits, but it's been a clear decision up front with the customer. I'm like, I don't do realism. This is the style that I do. Is this what you want? And if they're like, no, I'm looking for something a little bit more realistic, then I'm like, I totally understand. Unfortunately, I don't do that style, but I have a list of people who I do recommend that I'm friends with that I can give you their info and you can check out their style. But then I've had other people, I'm like, hey, this is my style. Is that all right? And they're like, oh my gosh, absolutely. Those look so good. Like, you're going to do great. And it's like, okay, cool. It's just about setting those expectations.
Oh, absolutely.
At the beginning, because I have seen the tattoo fails. And I would be mortified if that was me. Like, no.
You know, and that's also like when we're at markets and people ask if I do customs or whatever. And we tell people, like, that, you know, we do custom orders. If there's anything that comes up, you know, give us a call, email us, whatever. Except for portraits. Like, he will sit there and go, like, yeah, we do custom work, whatever. And you'll see my head come around the corner. Well, except portraits.
No, I will tell people that she will burn just about anything into a hunk of wood short of photorealistic portraits. That is my little spiel.
We've narrowed down to that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the end of it, I'm like, I like to tell people, and I've had some people go, "Oh no, really?" I'm like, "Yeah, no."
Yeah, yeah, I've had that too.
And I'm like, you know, that's fine. That is perfectly mm-hmm. fine if I'm not the artist that you want, because I, you know, people pleaser and all, but yep, I can't please everyone. And I'm like, that's not in the wheelhouse.
Right.
And we always tell people the same thing. If that's something that you're interested in, we have, and that's one of the things that's important about being part of a community yes. is, mm-hmm. you know, that you, like, everybody has their expertise, and if you can't provide them with something, be like, well, you know what, let me throw some work to somebody I know.
Yeah.
And you send the work over to them. And, you know, it's, I think it's really a positive aspect of kind of building out a community.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you also got to be willing to do that. There are just some people that are just not at all willing to, like, throw a fellow artist any kind of work. They're just like,
I don't understand that. Yeah, I don't understand that. I have a list. Like, I've sent people, Megan at Happy Camper. I have sent people her bio. Mm-hmm. And then I've sent people Andrena from Rainamore. Because she does pet portraits, but they're a different style. And so, like, I have a list of people, and I'm like, check out these styles. They all look different, and they all have a different vibe. But I don't do them.
You hope that, you know, people return the favor, you know?
Yeah, that's the hope. Yeah. I don't know if anyone ever does, but that's okay. Because, like, yeah. I don't mind helping my failed customer, my customer who is not a customer, find someone that will make them happy. Like, that doesn't cost me anything at all. Like, why wouldn't I support someone else and give their business a shout out if I'm unable to help this customer? Like, it's not costing me anything to do that.
All right.
It's also anyway. A matter of, like, putting it out there, like karma, right?
That's true. Yeah.
That's how I justified in my head.
That's true.
All right. How about least favorite shows markets to do?
Okay. The worst, my least favorite show that we ever did was for a Girl Scout troop at this local, I don't know, was it like a Presbyterian church? It was a little church pop-up thing, and it was like,
it is so wild to me that that's your least favorite.
That is my least. It was terrible. We made $0 that day. It was.
David,
it was.
So
he's taking the mic from me.
It was terrible.
Yes, yes, we've heard.
It sucks so bad.
It's so wild to me that that's your least favorite, because we have had so many worse shows.
Like what? Bro.
Rittenhouse Square.
Rittenhouse Square, we still came home with a couple thousand, even though
yeah,
the show.
But I had to talk you back down from, like, you wanted to just quit the business.
Okay, listen. So the show he's talking about, Rittenhouse, is in Philadelphia. We did this back in 2022, and I was in a terrible place mentally. I was changing some medicines for my mental health. I was not mentally stable at the moment. We were doing the show, and, like, the show itself was fine. The show itself was great. There was a wonderful crowd of people. It was our first ever juried show, so we didn't know what to expect. But, you know, I think our gross was like $2,400, but then we had to take out all of the expenses and the $600 booth and the hotel and the parking and, you know, food for 3 days in Philadelphia. Like, so we didn't actually end up making a lot, but we grossed a decent amount. You know, we sold stuff, but the experience of being in Philadelphia, our Airbnb fell through, the parking fell through, the hotel was effed up. Literally everything went wrong. Like, I was on the verge of panic at the end of the day, and David said my demeanor changed at the end of the day, whenever it was like the last hour of the show and we were having to like pack up and go back to, he was like, you changed, like you clammed up, you were nervous, you were anxious. And the thing was, is like, I was afraid because our Airbnb host, things were not going well with him, but he knew that we were at that show and he had met us at our tent. And I was afraid he was going to come for us. I was afraid he was going to like come to our, it was bad.
But that show was better than the one at the church.
Because the show itself was good. The experience of the travel and the Airbnb, like everything surrounding the show, absolutely sucked. But show itself, like that event was so terrible. The girls, like, I get it. It was like a $25 pop-up thing for your little space in the church gym, you know, for the Girl Scout troop. But it was dead. There was no one. And this was right when we were starting off. And, you know, we were like eager beavers and we have the light in our eyes, you know, like deer in a headlight, you know. No. Doe eyes? Is that what I'm thinking of? Yes, you know, like starry-eyed. Like, we have all the hopes and dreams. And then we were crushed and we made no money and no one showed up. And it was terrible. And I felt like shit. Because, like, we were just starting out. And I was like, this feels terrible. Yeah, farmers markets are not the place for us.
That's how I feel about farmers markets. Like, yeah, they are just not.
So that's your least favorite?
People. Yes, absolutely. Okay. Farmers markets are definitely mm-hmm. my personal favorite, least favorite. It's more so because it's a waste of money because they're not our people. Mm-hmm. We're not making sales. Like, there was one where we made kind of decent sales, sure, and that's also the same market that we met Jessica at. She's the lady who does the fractals.
Okay.
And Jessica from Crowley's Crafty Creations. Shout out. So, I mean, that's the one that we met her at. And that one was pretty good. But overall, farmers markets, they're mm-hmm. just not our people. We don't offer what they want or at the price that they
right.
wanted at. Mm-hmm. And that's really the bigger part of it. We did one in a school, and zero.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if I want to call it an actual sale because I ended up doing an exchange with another vendor. Mm-hmm. We traded product.
Yeah,
because she had a succulent. A succulent arrangement that I really liked, so she bought. Ryan's over here twitching because he hates succulents,
mm-hmm.
but I loved this thing. So, like, we traded. She fell in love with one of my pieces, and I fell in love with one of her pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So we just traded off. So, I mean, it wasn't necessarily a sale, but that was, like, the only interaction that yeah. we got. Like, people came by, and they were just, like, sticker shock from here to Kingdom Come.
I feel like those type of shows are the artist equivalent to a musician playing coffee shops for like an audience of two people.
Oh, that yeah. breaks my heart. Yeah, that's how it feels.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
But like, there are... Oh, go ahead.
I'm just saying, I'm with you, and it sucks if you go to a show and you don't make money. But there are shows that we have done, like... You're saying the one where we sat in the church and we didn't make any money for like 3 hours was worse than the one where the tent failed and it was raining and you were freezing cold and we were losing art because it was getting wet. Like,
is that the Chris Kittle
Mart? Yeah.
Yeah, that one did suck. I'm just saying this is the first one that came to mind. I was like, the least favorite show. Oh, that Girl Scout one sucked.
Okay. Well, so David, what
I
was do. Your least
I have.
Show?
I have trauma blockage. It's just I can't control it.
It just happens. What's your favorite show?
What was? Yeah, your, David. Your what was your favorite? Least favorite?
I'll be honest. I think probably would be the. We did like Shippensburg Festival. It's the same type of thing where like you go and you set up and you don't make any money.
It was the county fair.
But this one was particularly annoying because I had to drive like an hour and a half to get there early. And like the church one was bad. We didn't make any money, but it wasn't like,
at least we were indoors.
It was indoors, and we were in and out in like 3 to 4 hours. But this was like 8 hours of nothing.
And it was saying it was the middle of July, and we were sweating our balls off, is what I said.
Great.
Yep. An off-color comment.
So, Brian, what was your least favorite market?
So, I have a different perspective on this because I don't really feel like these markets, any of the markets, are bad, because they all had something that we got out from them. Like,
yes.
Zona said, you know, like, oh, well, this market, we didn't make a lot of money, but we met this person, and now this person is a... you know, a friend of ours. This is somebody who we've done other, you know, collaborations with. Well, we didn't really do great at this market, but we met these people who later on came back and we got a sale from. We just did a market last weekend where we hardly made any sales.
Two sales.
Yeah, we made two sales, and... it's one that we usually do well at, and it's like, yeah, that's disappointing, but we also were really pushing our socials, and we got a ton of followers, and we got a ton of people who said they're going to get back to us. Now, whether or not those people are going to come through is, you know, to be seen, but, it's something that, like, for instance, I was, you know, like when we're not doing well, I might walk around a little bit or look at what some of the other vendors are doing and try to get an idea and say, well, this person's doing really well. What are they doing different than us? Mm-hmm. What can we be doing to, you know, to aspire to be more like this business so that we could be making sales?
Yeah.
And so I don't really look at any of our markets as their quote-unquote bad. Yeah, farmer markets suck. There's very little that you get out of those, you know, unless you want to do your howdy y'all signs.
Listen, there is a market for those people.
Uh-huh.
Or if there you do is. A bunch of, like, smaller items, cheaper items, kitchen items, wooden spoons, cheap cutting boards, you know, there. But if that's not your business, if that's not what you enjoy doing, if that's not your audience, then don't do those things. You know what I mean? Anyway.
So I have a tough time answering that question.
Yeah, I feel that.
I don't really feel like there's any markets or any shows that we did that I really don't feel like we got anything out of.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel that. Like, go ahead.
I challenge that and say one word. Greensboro.
Well, Greensboro sucks because the stupid people on the radio decided tell everybody, stay away from the convention center.
Well, the question was, what was your least favorite show?
But that show...
Listen.
That show, you know, we may not have done great at that show, but again, you know, it was a learning experience.
Yeah.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's something that David and I talk about a lot, too. It's like, I tend to get more hung up in the emotions of, like, being down or feeling crappy about a show or whatever. David is always much more level-headed and is like, well, there are things that we can take away. And after I'm done processing the emotions, I can look at the situation more logically and see the good and the bad and take away learning experiences from it. So, like, it does come down to your perspective. Like, if you choose to be miserable at a show that's not going well, then you're going to be miserable. But if you can find good things about it, or you can find a way to enjoy yourself, or you can find a way that makes it worth your time, you know, maybe you like to crochet on the side and you've been working on this Afghan for 2 years, bring it. And you might have, if it's a crappy show, but maybe you had a lot of time to put into this Afghan that you're going to gift your brother. I don't know. You know, like, there's always something that you can take away from it. If you're a student, you can work on homework, you can read, you can design, or you can get up and walk around. You can make connections. You can talk to your neighbors. You can look at how other people have set up. You can take pictures of other people's booths and be like, okay, I like how they have this table like this. How can I make my display more conducive to selling? You know, like, there's all sorts of stuff that you can do and take away But it comes down to your attitude and your perspective on it. And I feel like my attitude initially when something is not going well, like I'm down on myself. It's not necessarily I have a bad attitude. I'm just more sad. I'm more defeated. The imposter syndrome is like, well, I guess I really do suck because this sucked. And like, I didn't make any sales. Like, does this mean that I suck and my art isn't worth it? You know, like I get really caught up in the emotional aspect of it. But like I said, once the emotions can process and it's like, okay, this wasn't all bad. These are things that I can take away. And I feel like that's really the perspective that people have to have. Because if you don't, and you have bad show after bad show after bad show, like you're going to be bitter. You're going to be upset. You're going to hate it. And like, why do that to yourself? Like, try to find the good, even if it takes you a couple days to find the good.
I mean, it's interesting that you said that, because the one thing that I accomplished at the Greensboro show was that I actually worked on this one piece that I had been procrastinating to Dickens on, because I wanted to do it, but then I didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So I spent that show working on that one piece. It's actually the Wildflowers piece.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so that's what I worked on while I was working. And it was complete iron. And it was hilarious to me that I worked on that piece completely while I was at that show. I think the only thing I did when I got home was a couple of little details and coloring. Mm. Otherwise, I did it while I was at that show.
That's awesome.
It took me like 10 hours.
Wow.
To do that. I think it was about 10 hours. But, you know, that, yeah, so that was, at least I keep busy, but that's also why I burn on site, because I keep my hands busy.
Yeah.
So, just last question, and honestly, I don't know if, you know, this is a tough question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Least favorite piece of art or least favorite custom order? Like, to me, that seems like a hard question to answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did it for the favorites, so I thought it would be appropriate to think of our least favorites, and my answer that I wrote down on our notes was, oof, so many. Because I have so many pieces that I just didn't like that I have literally thrown into the burn pile and burned in our fire pit for campfire season. Like, I know that people hate to see that. You know, I it kills me when I see somebody sanding off their artwork that I think is so beautiful. And people, I'm sure, have thought that about me when they've seen me sand off something that they really liked, but like I hated it, so I'm sanding it away.
As David turns and looks at you.
Yeah, he's thinking about the cactus piece that we talked about.
Yeah.
But I think the one that stands out the most to me is this jellyfish piece. I had this idea in my head for these jellyfish, and it was right when I had first started out. Started out really diving into it. So this was like when COVID hit and everything had shut down, and I had like splurged on Yuli watercolors, and I was experimenting with like her glitters and her shiny micas, and you know, I had just really splurged and got all these, and I was like, I want to do this jellyfish because these would look so cool on jellyfish. So I did this jellyfish piece. I stippled the background. All right, I had over 10,000 dots because I count my dots. I don't know if you know that about me. It's therapeutic. I count my dots as I go. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
You can't whisper it.
Zona is saying
You're crazy.
Listen, it is so therapeutic, and it's like I allow my mind to shut up. And I don't have any thoughts. It's just empty. You know how like there's the joke about how men can like just sit there and fish. Like, what are you thinking about for hours? You're just sitting there fishing. They're thinking about nothing. My brain doesn't ever do nothing except when I'm stippling and counting dots. It's like quiet.
I mean, I don't, fishing is boring to me, but I have no patience.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a thing that I've heard people say. It's like, how do men just sit there and just fish for hours? Like
the honest truth is though, I can understand that because like you said, with stippling, your mind just, it doesn't go blank. It just has no, it's just free form. Right.
Yeah.
And like, I understand that because like when I do a more realistic portrait, like when I was doing the flowers, I wasn't thinking, when I was working on Felicity's box, I was thinking about, it was therapeutic because I was thinking about like, yes, could have been, would have, and mm-hmm. you know, but like the better memories. And then it was just other things would come in, and it wasn't like, I was like, no, I got to concentrate on this. I just let my mind go.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I joke around about you counting, which I think is still crazy, but on the other hand, I get it because I know a lot of people who actually, like, when I stipple, I don't count up until 10,000, but I might count up until like 6 or 7, like, or some odd number, or like, well, not really odd, but like an even number. It has to be even for me. So I'll count out like 10, and then I'll count out more 10. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's how I might do it mm-hmm. if I was to do it. But yeah, least favorite piece. Oh God, what is my least favorite piece?
You think about that. The jellyfish piece is the piece that lady came back and bought.
Yeah, but I hated this piece, and I kept telling
you. I hated this dang piece. David wouldn't let me throw it away. I didn't want to bring it to any of my shows. I was embarrassed by it. I didn't like the quality. I didn't like anything about it. And David was like, I love the jellyfish piece. It deserves a spot on the wall. And I'm like, fine, put it in the freaking box. Like, whatever. And it sold. This was the Port Warwick show that we did last fall. And the lady came back the second day and was like, "That I need that piece." She had been deliberating about it. She didn't know if she wanted that piece or this piece. Like, oh, I really want both of them. I gotta think about it. And I still had it priced at like $350. Listen, I was willing to trade it for a bag of Cheetos. Like, it was not. I hated this piece so much, but David was like, no, you're standing by the price. Don't lower the price. If she wants it, let her pay that, because that is what it took you to do when you did it 3 years ago. I'm sorry you hate it now, but 3 years ago when you did that piece, that is the price that it was worth. So hold it to that price. And it sold. And so now I don't have to look at it ever again. Thank God.
I think my least favorite piece to do is probably the Carcassonne coasters.
That's the one that blew up on Reddit, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And truthfully, the reason that I do not like that particular coaster set is simply because I had to make like 50 sets.
Really? 50 sets?
Like the first, when it blew up in Reddit, it was 38. I had to make 38 sets.
Wow.
That first round. And progressively, I've made a few sets over time, and I haven't done a set in a while, but they are definitely my least favorite. And it's really because it's like, oh, it's another one.
People,
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's repetitive.
Yeah,
the repetitiveness of it just bleh.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I it's my least favorite. I don't hate it. I actually love the way that they come out. I love the way that they look. And I've finessed the look. So I do love the end product.
It's just the process.
Don't like the repetitive. Yeah. I just don't like the repetitive.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do more than two or three of a thing, because then I'm just like, all right, I am so over this. Mm-hmm. I am so done.
I need something new, like ready to move on. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And that's really what it is that about that particular piece.
It's just boring. Like, I'm tired of it. Yeah.
Yes. That's really what it is.
I get that.
But I don't know if I have any pieces that I'm just like, oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the sander?
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to wrap, unless there's anything else that you want to hate on.
Oh,
I want to hate on the Varathane spray.
Okay.
The Rust-Oleum Varathane spray. I loved it when it was good, but now it just sucks, and I do not recommend it. It's splotchy. It's foamy. No matter how much you shake it or don't shake it, like, it just sucks. Don't use it. And Mod Podge. There was a point in time where I really liked Mod Podge, but my paintings that I did in college, because I have like some Star Wars paintings that I did in college and I sealed them with Mod Podge and they're still hanging down here in our basement. They're tacky. It's like the Mod Podge. I don't know if it's just like it's old, humidity? It's 10 years old, humidity. I don't know, but it's like tacky. And I'm like, why?
That's good to know. Mm-hmm. Reference.
Right.
But I would never seal any of myself with Mod Podge. I just feel like that's cheap, for lack of a better word.
I've done some pieces with Mod Podge, and now I'm like,
Again, it goes back to like, fine art pieces, right? You don't, the whole Dollar Tree theory, mm-hmm. right? Like, you don't use Mod Podge on a to seal a $1,000 piece,
right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like the, you know, it has a time, it has a place. Mm-hmm. So it is what it is, but you got to learn it though, right? That's mm-hmm. the whole thing.
Yeah,
we learn the goods, the bads, the ins, the outs, and we talk to people to get information, and like that's the whole point of this podcast,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah,
is to.
To talk about it.
Talk about it. Let's get some information. Let's trade secrets, quote unquote. Like, let's get some other people in there, you know, to let us know what they like, what they don't like, favorites, not favorites, and, you know, what their opinions are.
Yeah.
That is the whole point, so.
So, I think we'll wrap on that.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, I think we covered a lot.
I think our next topic is how we do shows.
All about doing shows and markets.
Shows and markets.
So it's going to be it's an A and B again, because it's going to be, we're going to dedicate one episode to your perspective, one episode to our perspective, goods, bads, uglies, and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So that's what we have planned for the next two episodes.
Okay, so next episode, episode 5A, is going to be on how we run markets, how we run shows. Remember to check out our Pyrotoasty Talks website, pyrotoastytalks.com. Go to our Instagram, Pyrotoasty Talks, our individual Instagrams. It's David and Renee and BZ Furfur. Check out our Discord server, join in, tell us what you like, tell us what you don't like, discuss the episodes, and offer suggestions, and we will see you all in a couple of weeks. Stay toasty.
Stay toasty. Stay toasty.